Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who wish they had as much face time with Cooter as Matthew Stafford. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy-ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast. This is episode 103. This is the official Detroit Lions podcast for Reddit. I'm your dashing host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Actually, Case couldn't be here today. He's home upstairs sleeping in bed. He's sick. This is his wife, Jessica.
Oh, okay. Okay, great, Jess. It'll be great to have you on the show. I think you probably do a better job. in today's show, we're going to knock out a great segment on This Week in Reddit. Got a lot of good stuff to talk about, a good variety. We've got the Detroit Lions' best multimedia journalist, Tori Petrie, joining us to talk about the 2017 Lions draft class. And she's going to make a huge announcement that we think you folks are going to love. Lastly, we've got the Riz, as usual, and we're going to break down the latest in Lions news with him. We got a great show lined up. Jess, are you ready to go?
Right, so this guy comes home from the worst day of work ever. He just drags his carcass up his front steps, barely makes it through the door, and his wife says, "My God, you look terrible. Tell you what, you go upstairs, you get in a nice hot bath, I'm gonna bring you a beer and a sandwich and the paper, and you just chill out for the night, okay?" So he drags himself up the stairs and he's dropping his briefcase and crawls into a hot tub, and it's just starting to feel a little bit better. So the wife comes in, and sure enough, she's got a nice hoagie and a big mug of beer in the morning or the evening paper. And says, "Now, if you need anything else, you just holler down and I'll bring it up for you." And he says, "Thank you, dear." And she leaves. So there he is. He's in the warm bath and it's doing its job. He's relaxing in the hot water and drinking his beer. And all of a sudden he lets out this enormous fart, like the biggest one you've ever heard. And it rumbles through the water and it stinks up the room. And he's giggling to himself and he's starting to feel a little bit better. And a few minutes later, his wife walks in and she's holding this water bottle. And he says, "Well, what's that for?" She says, "Didn't you just yell down, 'What about a hot water bottle?'"
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, it's time for the announcements. First, Black Rifle Coffee. Big sponsor of the show. They're back again this month, and you get a chance to win some more. We've got some great stuff going out. They're tweeting back a lot of the last month's winners, a lot of the stuff that they got, and they're sharing it. So make sure you get your Wake Up and Smell the Coffee moment, about 119 characters or less, via Twitter with the hashtag #WinBlackRifleCoffee. We'll take a couple of lucky winners at the end of the month, and you'll get some great prizes from Black Rifle Coffee. Make sure to check us out and help us out via Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from...
Guam.
Michael, Matthew, Eric, Lucas, Joel, Bert, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Justin, John, Rand, Ross, Matt, Morgan, Randy, Peter, and Matt G, and Kalen, Scott, Joel, Greg, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. Also want to call out our newest patrons, Marcus, Bryce, Lucas, Danny, Alex, Floundericious, David, and Richard. You folks are all spectacular. That list is getting very, very long, and we got some good stuff coming up here. We're going to start doing some live streams for our Patreon donors of our Riz segment, so you get to see some of the silliness that goes on behind the scenes. We have a great time doing those, and we'll put those up for our Patreon donors as just a little extra special behind-the-scenes look, so be sure to get involved with that. If you'd like to see that, become a Patreon donor, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast, or just go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon donation button. Thanks all for what you gave. Also, don't forget to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. That's facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. And of course, on Twitter, @DETLionsPodcast. It's the best place to see Jess.
Second date, guys. Not happening.
Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever. We're looking for your reviews. Those reviews are very, very helpful. And don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. All one word, Detroit Lions Podcast. Or via the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. That's 929-335-4667. Leave us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review this week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things that have gone down this week in Reddit. And I'm going to kick it off this time, Case, if you don't mind. This one is called Man, I Love When That Shit Gets Stickied by Chef Curry Sauce. And we got memed. We got turned into a meme, Case. That was so cool. Did you see that?
I absolutely did. And Chef Curry Sauce, I chuckled. Okay. Like, it's been his mission for months now to make me chuckle. So, but mission accomplished, man.
Good job, Curry Sauce. No, that was great. Problems, stress, and pain kicking around, and a nice hug for the Lions podcast. That's great. That's great. So, you know, I was thinking about it, and all you guys that have been supporting and listening have been awesome. And we want to thank you guys just off the top of the show. We recognize that you have to burn calories to listen to the show. I mean, we spend time putting it together, and it would suck if it was just Case and I and our moms downloading the show and that was it, right? But you guys, the numbers keep going higher and higher. We're in the off season here. We're in a zone hitting numbers that are near some of the highest we've ever had. And we just see this great growth happening. So thank you guys all very, very much for listening to the show and supporting the show since the beginning. And all you later comers, thank you for joining in and sticking with us. It's a lot of fun. And check out DetroitLionsPodcast.com. I've seen a lot of the stories getting sticky. I would say that we are right up there with some of the journalism and the other Lions blogs out there. We've got some great writers putting some great content out there. And the traffic there has been going through the roof too. So thank you everybody who found us, recognized, you know, that there's some quality content there and that enjoy it. It means a lot to us because, like I said, we put a lot of hours in and a lot of time and a lot of effort. And to have you guys enjoying it, that just feels great. The hug goes both ways.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I can add anything to that other than I'm super appreciative of all of you who are willing to listen to us. But we have something here that came out on Tuesday night, and it's not the first time this topic has come up because it came up during the draft back in 2014, I think, and I think largely got dismissed as a non-story, like nobody really believed it.
And the 3D glasses were more fun.
Right. But it's come up again. And maybe the fact that it's come up again in and of itself is more of a you know, smoke, there might be fire kind of situation. The rumor is that Ansa's actual age is 29, not 27. And that he was already, I think, 24 when he joined the Lions as opposed to 22, which we always kind of knew he was a little bit on the older end of the spectrum. But this whole idea that he could be 29 now and 30 next offseason after his rookie contract finishes really could change the whole dynamic of his contract, you know, discussions and whether or not this is, you know, confirmed or whether or not this gets shut down. I have no idea right now what to expect out of it, but it's at least interesting to wonder, because if the Lions were to, if he bounces back big time this year, mm-hmm. And by bounces back big time this year, we're talking about double-digit sacks. We're talking about, like, return to the dominant form that he seemed to be 2 years ago before these injuries this last year. He could easily be a candidate for the franchise tag. If, again, that's if he returns to that form. If he doesn't, well, I'm not sure where the incentive is for the Lions to spend a ton of money on him. I mean, other than the fact that they're weak at the defensive end position, but they'll have money to address that position in free agency. They'll have opportunity to do that in the draft. So if it turns out that he is 29 and not 27, like, his long-term prospects with the Lions might not be quite as good. But I think in terms of the team, like as crazy as this might sound, in terms of the team, it might actually benefit them long term. If not to jump into a long term contract with somebody who's already 29, and you can make the argument about he doesn't have the tread on the tires he does have the tread on the tires since he hasn't played for as long, but I think 2 years versus a little bit of tread, it's a tough argument to make. So,
and is it really just the amount of time they've played? Or does age itself catch up to him?
Right, and I definitely do believe that age itself is an important factor.
Yeah, you look at a lot of sports, the twitchiness and things that some of the elite athletes have goes away. It just goes away, even amongst the great ones. And year 7 and 8 is where defensive linemen start to have that decline. And then when you get to the years 9 and 10 of their career, that flattens for a little bit. But It's year 7 and 8, and you look at a guy who's 29 instead of 27, and he's right at that spot. This is going to be a telling year for Ziggy, no matter how old he is. This is going to be a telling year what we do with him. But there's also, some suspicion that maybe the Lions knew a little bit about it, and they knew what age he was going in. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see if this comes out. There's a lot of speculation. We're talking about age based on that speculation. So we're going a little bit deep down a rabbit hole. But like you said, there's been a lot of smoke. Maybe there's some fire here. We'll have to see how this plays out over the coming weeks.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so here's a popular topic for me. and I know that anybody who actually listens to us religiously knows that my reputation on the topic doesn't necessarily 100% align up with how I actually feel about it, the idea is that I am absolutely madly and truly in love with Zach Zetter, and I don't want to discourage that
but
notion.
It's just a rumor.
I love Zach Zetter. I love Zach Zetter. Exactly. I love Zach Zetter. God, I love that kid.
There is a post. Showing a PFF stat that both Zenner and Riddick were both significantly better than Blount and Asiata, the two guys that it seems the Lions have been tacked to most closely as potential late free agents for the team. That both of those players were, that Zenner and Riddick were both better yards after contact than those other two guys. And the implication seeming to be that, why bring either of those guys in when both these guys are yards after, okay, and the yards after contact situation. I don't completely disagree with the idea, but I do think that's a stat that's, when you have your running backs taking their first contact behind the line of scrimmage as often as any team in the league, which the Lions did, you're going to end up with a lot of situations where they end up with 10, 15 yard gains after contact. I think that's going to skew those numbers a little bit. I'm comfortable. I'll go as far as to say this. And I honestly think that, this is me saying I'm a Zenner fan. I'm comfortable with Zach Zenner as the power back. I'm not thrilled. I'm not over the moon about it, but I don't hate it. And now, if you want to talk about Riddick in that same situation, they're both above those other two guys. Riddick, I am not comfortable at all in that role. And so that's why I think if you look at the statistic and only at the statistic and you try to make too big of a conclusion at it, you're gonna seriously misguide yourself.
Sure.
So that's the idea in my eyes.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think the numbers, you have Zenner was 13th, ranked 13th, and Theo Riddick was at 18th in the league for creating yards after contact. And Blount came in at 29th and Asiata at 51st. That's pretty significant difference. And what are you gonna pay for Blount versus what you're paying for Zenner? Or Theo. You got Theo signed, so you got some hits and so on there that you're going to take if you don't keep him. As a power back, you're right. There's no role for Theo. Theo's a tough player because he's damn good, but he's so very single-dimensional. Hopefully that changes this year and gives you some flexibility with him in the offense, because I think that's the only thing missing from Theo's game is that flexibility. So maybe with the improved offensive line, that gives him a much better running between the tackles kind of situation where he can kind of parlay line into something, because that makes him one hell of a deadly player. He's not your power back, though. That would still be like a Zenner role. And again, Blount, I don't know what you're going to get out of him or Asiata as the Detroit Lions, who aren't a favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. And you're looking for a guy who's just trying to crank out another season or two for
right,
some money.
Right,
you absolutely. Know what I mean? What's he going to give you? Where's Zach Zenner? He's here. This is a team. He's still proven himself. He's a guy that still has upside, I believe. And I'm really interested in what he brings. But I think you can sum it all up.
I love Zach Zenner.
And there's nothing different than that. Other than, of course,
he pushed Calvin's Johnson.
And we all know that happened. But, all right, moving on to the next topic. Detroit Lions safety Glover Quinn looking for a contract extension. And Case, when does his contract end? We got one more year with him, right?
This is his final year on the current contract. Yep. He will be 31 through this season, and next season he would be 32. His birthday is in January. Mm-hmm.
Can I just kind of go here really quick?
Yeah.
We had a safety. It was part of the Quinn Ikhedebo tandem that were just awesome. And suddenly Ikhedebo wanted an early extension on his contract. Now, this isn't Quinn asking for an early extension, but do you remember that? And I started speculating that he knows something. He wants to cash in now because he knows something's not right. And lo and behold, that next year he was a shell of what he used to be. And the year after that, he was no longer in the league. Now, Glover Quinn is, as we know, one of the classiest acts in the NFL. And I would never accuse him of that. But I sit here and I worry, right? That's me. I'm a worrier sometimes when I see these things, and I know history often repeats and things happen for reasons. Is this a case where Glover thinks that this is his last chance to really get paid? And he wants to finish out as a Lion. I really believe that. But is he going to try to pull a little more money than maybe he could otherwise by getting it now? What do you think, Case?
I don't think the situations are that similar.
They both play safety.
Right, exactly. Quinn seemingly is coming off of a down year. And we talked about this, I think, the last couple podcasts. He's seemingly, if you're just looking at the statistics, coming off a down year in terms of, like, he didn't have as many interceptions. But as I've said, you know, multiple times, I think that's because he is an opportunistic player, and the opportunities just simply weren't there. Because we allowed opposing offenses to play short ball on us, dink and dunk, and not really have to force them into difficult situations, mm-hmm. that cut into Quinn's productivity as what he does best. You know, he is opportunistic, and if you don't have opportunities, you can't, you know, really take advantage of that. The whole thing with me is that I don't think this last season is indicative of a significant drop off in his ability, his physical ability, but B, he's also the best leader we have on the defense. And I think that's the intangible that's hard to track in terms of how important it is. But until Jared Davis, I still want to call him Gerard. Sorry, man. We'll get that sorted out eventually here. But until Jared Davis, you know, takes on the role that it seems inevitable that he will, it's still Quinn. And for two or three years, to have that kind of veteran leadership along with an opportunistic player is going to make plays and not make a lot of mistakes and put other guys in position to succeed by giving them good information. I have a hard time moving away from that. I don't understand the eagerness to move away from that. I get, you know, he's older. Anybody on the wrong side of 30, you want to like it. I get the desire to replace at that point. Anybody who's over 30, it would be better to have a young stud than the old guy. I get that. But his position, a position that typically has pretty good longevity compared to other positions, mm-hmm. his value as a leader, his physical ability that seems to have, you know, maintained, I don't want to move on from him yet. And maybe that's, I worry maybe I'm just biased about that, but I just don't think looking at everything that he's done that it's the right time to try to move on from him yet.
So. No, I can't disagree. I just, like I said, my worry is that he's trying to get that money now before his performance proves the doubts. I don't think he's suffered. You're right. The defense last year is what wrecked his game. I think he's got a couple years left, but I have to go with him. He's such a class guy that I don't think he would go out in that kind of way. You know what I mean? I don't think he would, yeah. He would end his spot on a team that he really seems to love and truly be a leader on in a way like that. So, you know, shout out to Quinn. I hope he sticks around. I hope he can still perform and we can get the best out of him. Hopefully we can get this guy a couple of playoff wins here in Detroit before he does go. That would be ideal.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk really quick about your gaming experience, okay? And a lot of you folks I know are video gamers. I'm a nutty video gamer. I love my video games. And I picked up a product to help some of the garbage that I was finding in the latest Call of Duty game. The lag and the hit detection was terrible, and I was at my wit's end because I have a great internet connection. All my other games work fine, but this one was a hot mess. So I picked up this router from NetDuma, NETDUMA, and I used it to do a couple of things. Number one, it lets you put a kind of a geographic fence around an area and say how far away you're gonna let people connect to play with you. And those people being closer to you ensure yourself a better quality connection, lower ping, better hit detection, all that kind of stuff. Also, it allows you to kind of portion out your internet. Say, I'm going to take this much for my games and not let anything else encroach on my, you know, my wife watching Netflix will never ruin my gaming experience again because she's been portioned off and won't be able to beat into that. she still can watch Netflix. She doesn't know any better. She just isn't wrecking my game. So there's that. You get to deny hosts. If you find a host that's raw, that just gives you a raw deal and gives you a bad connection, maybe someone, you keep finding someone connected to them in Madden and they're just lagging and crapping things out, or they're just cheating. There's some exploits sometimes out there. Go ahead and just block them and you'll never connect to them again. You can very quickly do that in the interface. Really, really awesome product. It has changed. You know, I'm a guy who loves my games, has gamed since a long time ago. And this is the thing that's made my gaming so much more enjoyable. The biggest thing that I found to make my gaming experience better in all the years that I've been gaming, all the little tweaks and polish I've put on the different connections and all that stuff, this thing is the deal. We're going to have a contest. We decided to postpone it till next month because there's going to be some announcements and stuff, and we're going to tie into some of the marketing going on there. But right now, check it out. NetDuma, NETDUMA. Use the keyword or the coupon code FOOTBALL. Order yourself up one of the best routers, bust your lag, give yourself the greatest gaming experience you're going to find on the internet. Again, NETDUMA, netduma.com, and coupon code FOOTBALL. Get yourself a heck of a deal and support the contest and make your gaming experience way, way better. All right, we'll move on now to a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, one that I've probably not shared my true thoughts on. And that's Eric Ebron. I had a quote. This was, you know, here we are, Chef Curry Sauce again, active guy. He said Ebron was pretty destroyed by injuries during the last season. And, you know, there was a good conversation in the comments about this and kind of where I'm at on it. When you see Ebron take a hit and go down like a ding, right? One that's going to hurt. He looks like he was shot, right? Like he took the Kennedy blow in the preseason last year, and I was like, holy shit, this guy is out for the season. No question about it. He's done. He is done for. And what was it, a week later? Week and a half later?
Right.
He's back out there playing.
A drive later?
Yeah. I was just like, well, And, you know, his reaction to hits is often, and I'm not going to say they don't hurt, because the hits, especially those guys seem to always go down low for his knees. The hits that he takes, I couldn't handle a single one of the hits that this guy takes and any of these guys take. I'm totally not trying to say that he's weak or whatever, but his reaction seems to be a lot more outward, more dramatic than just about anybody else on the field. And I say that because he so often has these huge reactions to a hit and then pops right back in the game. And I see that, and then I hear, I was pretty destroyed by injuries last season. You know, I know players are getting dinged up and beat up all the time and play through it when they can and rest when they can and all that, but I just... This guy, he is a paradox. There's times and I am absolutely in love with him, and I curse my own name for the bad mojo I had around him. And there's other times where I sit there and say, see, I told you, see, I knew it. I just don't know how to handle him. And it's not people love to go back to the Hackney. That's just because where he was picked in the draft. No, that's over. That's done. I've got a tight end that I expect to catch the ball and destroy people. Upward trend every year. It's that paradox case. And so anyway, his injuries were his injuries. He said he was destroyed by them. Is this the year case? This is it, right? I guess we picked up his fifth year, so we're good there. We got 2 years left with this guy, but he's really got to perform in these 2 years, doesn't he?
Yeah. With Ebron, and I have like one foot in both camps here too, because I agree with you. I do agree that he's, you know, his injury issues are like, that maybe he's over dramatic about things, that he oversells things, and that you know, he's not, you know, he's not the toughest guy on the field in terms of like just powering through.
And you say that knowing that he would kick both of our asses at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. 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 So I don't mean to be like, but we have to compare him to everybody else on the field.
Right.
Not us. To me or you. Right.
Although so, I would pay money to see him beat your ass, just so you know.
Right. Now, that said, if what he's saying has merit in the sense that what he was going through was unusual, which I don't know that we can assume it was, but if this is all if right now, if what he was going through was unusual and that he truly is over whatever it was that he was going through this last season, and he does finally put together, you know, his healthy year this next year, if that happens, I mean, then it changes a lot for him too. It really does.
Will you be willing to eat crow if he has that breakout year?
Well, I don't know that I need to eat crow, because I've always said he had that potential.
I'll eat crow even knowing he did have the potential and not, hadn't lived up to it previously, because I said he didn't live up to it. But if he comes out and really, I will heartily eat in that black feathered beast.
The biggest complaint I have against him, other than simply the health issue, isn't the drops. It's that he doesn't play as strong as he should. And that's a great point. You know, that's to me, that's why Roberts got drafted. To me, that's why Fells got brought in. To me, that's even why Galladay might have been drafted. They're strong receivers. And Ebron just hasn't been as strong as you'd expect a guy his size, his weight, his, you know, physical makeup to be. Even when he's healthy. And I say that even when he's healthy, but maybe he was suffering from some things that we didn't know about. Maybe. Yeah. So this is his last year to really prove, like, can you be that first down, or excuse me, that third down, that red zone receiver who gets
it done.
It done. Right, exactly. And you could compare him to Anquan Boldin, and in certain aspects you could say, oh, he did better job than Anquan Boldin in this, he did better job than Anquan Boldin in that. But when it came down to the important moments, who were they leaning on? And that answers your question.
Right. And then I think the next piece is if he gets injured, even, you know, if he has an outward injury this year, something that you see, oh yeah, definitely, you know, that took him out. Then you got to ding him on availability, because availability is part of the skill of being an NFL player. And
absolutely,
he has to be available and he has to perform this year.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on. When someone says that Calvin Johnson doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and there's that picture of Caldwell's face, that look we all know, the 1,000-yard stare on the sideline, that's from Devil Lion Steeler. This is an interesting talk, and I don't think we've had it before, Case.
We might have gotten into it once or twice, but I think, you know, it's good. It's a good time to get back into it.
I love Calvin Johnson, and I don't.
So do I.
I don't think there's anybody that doesn't. I absolutely love him. Wish he was still playing. Understand why he's not. Respect his decision. Respect his skills, and everything about the guy. His class. His ability to dance. Right. All of this stuff about Calvin.
Being humble as a wide receiver, as great as he is. Yeah. Compare him to T.O. I mean, it's just.
He's.
It's hard not to love.
Yep, yeah, but. The words Hall of Fame come up, and I it's not that I don't want him to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't, at least in the near future, I don't see a path for him. I just don't see a way for him to get in. Where are you at?
Well, I'm on the same side of it as that you are, and this is one of those topics where there's no possible way that you're not going to make enemies by saying it. Do I think if it came down to the talent at his peak, would he make it? Of course he would. Of course he would.
First ballot.
There are only a few wide receivers who were even have an argument to be made that they were better in their peaks. He might have been the best wide receiver ever in terms of it, in terms of his peak. But okay, here's how I explained it in the sub, and I know that a lot of people don't agree with me, and that's okay. We'll see how things play out, and it's one of those situations where it's like you hope you're wrong, because like I would be ecstatic if he made the Hall of Fame. That would be totally cool. It would make my day. I have his jersey. I'd wear his jersey every goddamn day. Like I don't mean this to be in any way, shape, or form me not respecting Calvin Johnson, because I really do. He's one of my very favorite Lions players ever. That said, there are three things, in my opinion, that are super crucial for Hall of Fame induction. There's longevity, there's postseason success, and there's statistical dominance. The only one of those things that Calvin Johnson had was statistical dominance. And even at that, he had it for a brief period of time. He was the best wide receiver in the league for 3 years, statistically. You can make an argument that he was the best wide receiver on either end of that by a year or two also, depending on your view of things. But really what it boils down to is that he was the clear-cut best wide receiver in the NFL for 3 years, from 2011 to 2013. He dominated. And only in two of those years did he really, like, he set himself way above everyone else. So how much value do you put on 3 years? And in none of those 3 years... And the example that got brought up in the sub and that I've seen before is, you know, Terrell Davis only had 4 good years as a running back. But Terrell Davis also won 2 Super Bowls in those 4 years. If Calvin Johnson, in the 3 years that he was like the guy in the league, had won anything of importance. And I also agree that with some of the other things people said, that's more important for quarterbacks than it is for other positions. I do agree with that, but I also don't think you can discount that effect for other positions either. He just doesn't have the success on a big stage that you'd expect to see in most of your Hall of Fame candidates. And I get that he was a generational player, but that only lasted for a few years.
Yeah, I think, Case, I think you nailed it. I don't think there's really anything more to be said. I want him in the Hall of Fame. I think his talent level is there, but there's a lot of other stuff that kind of gets in the way. So moving on to the next topic. This one's from Fishy Washington. question for the podcast. Who will be 2017's Man Ram? And this is a good question. There's some good conversation in the subreddit about it. Really what they're thinking is kind of a veteran signing from a championship team type of thing. Who's, you know, say capable veteran who's kind of an insurance policy for the young talent. A lot of talk out there, maybe Blunt, Michael Floyd, that kind of stuff. He had some good stuff that you put out there, and there's a lot of other talk out there. So I think that was a pretty good question.
Yeah, it was actually a really good question. I just don't have any idea how to answer it at this point. Until we find out if there are any, you know, late veterans who fill some unexpected holes or something like that. You know, obviously, Anquan Boldin stepped in last year late in the process and became a huge, huge impact player for the Lions. He could do the same this year, and maybe he's the answer to that question. I don't know. But it's a very specific question, and truth be told, I really just don't know how to answer it.
Well, let's keep that in the docket for a future podcast. Maybe as we get towards the end of June after OTAs, maybe we can take a look at that. That's probably a good time to start talking about the Man Ram. All right. Last topic before we hit the loved around the division segment. Interesting take on Tease Tabor's 40 speed. And I thought this was actually very, very good question. Basically, you know, they look at talk about his 40 at the combine and say, okay, first off, just ignore the time because we all know it's a slow time, right? What they want you to do is count his steps for every 5 yards after he's hit football speed, right? And the reason he says that is because you know a cornerback will never put his hand in the dirt, right? You just start from standing up and you go. So he gets his hand up and starts running. His first 5 yards took 4 steps and were just horrible, right? He just didn't get up and out very well. But the next 35 yards, he's only taken 2 steps for every 5 yards. And that's what the fastest wide receivers do. If you look at them, their steps are 2 for every 5 yards. So this was posted by Whippersnapper UT99. He'd found it on MLive in the comments. Somebody had put it there. So that's as good as we can source that. So good post, good find, and good share. We got to get Kyle Meinke on. We got to talk to him. Remember that. But this is a really good point about Tease, that he has that kind of speed once he's up. And maybe his 40 times are that he just can't get out of that crouch, but he has the speed to play. You look at his film, he looks like a very aggressive type of player, and he didn't, you know, he didn't play against crappy competition.
Yeah, for sure. And here's the thing with Tease. It's my hesitation on him has much, much, much less to do with his 40 time than it simply does with the whole same thing that you see with every cornerback entering the NFL. It's a challenge. It's a huge shift. And I can get behind the arguments that say, that he may not have those same challenges as somebody who is maybe more physically gifted but technically lacking. But he still has something to prove. And I'm happy he's on the team. I'm not upset with the pick. I should mention there's a couple other cornerbacks in the league who had slow 40 times. Josh Norman and
he sucked. Can't even rub two nickels together.
Yeah, absolutely. And Richard Sherman. Neither one.
He's a quiet guy.
Right, absolutely. Sherman had fallen all the way to like the I don't remember exactly what round, fourth, fifth, sixth round that he was drafted in. And I think it was mainly for the same reason that on his 40 time, you know, he wasn't impressive. Now, I certainly don't think we should assume that Tabor is going to play up to that level, but we shouldn't assume that he can't either.
He's a Quinn pick. He's going to surpass both of them.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for. Yeah, a little cheerleading going there. Okay. Now this
I hope so.
It takes a while for a cornerback to go. And we've shown we can develop a cornerback. You know, Darius Slay got benched in his first year. I think twice in his first year on the field. It'll be fine. I think this is a good kind of long-term pick that can really he may be productive this year. But as Slay's really hitting it, he's going to hit it. I think at corner, we're going to be looking pretty good 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Okay, so here we are for the infamous
Around the Division!
Oh, I love this.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, man, this is so good for the soul. Oh!
Yeah. So I have to, I really do have to apologize. This is not my best work. This week in Around the Division really sucks. I keep hoping one of these weeks we'll actually have something interesting to talk about. We don't.
You're looking now, for a good DUI or spousal abuse or something?
Right. something to grasp onto here. So as always, we'll start at the bottom with the Bears and kind of jump through this because there isn't anything interesting going on in Chicago. Obviously, the number one draft pick situation. Right. They are booing him, which is like that's a great way to start off a relationship with your potential future franchise quarterback. But whatever. Cutler has now semi-officially retired to go into broadcasting. So I'm legitimately interested to see how Cutler does in terms of broadcasting because of his kind of malaise attitude. And I don't mean to overstate that in a way that makes people think I buy into everything that gets sold on Jay Cutler, but I certainly haven't ever seen him in an animated way that would make me think that's a good fit for him, but we'll see what happens. He might knock that out of the park. Here, the thing is, like, I absolutely hate Jay Cutler, but the only reason I hate Jay Cutler is because he was the Bears quarterback. If he'd played for any other team, I would not have negative feeling about him. I'd probably defend him.
That's
so
really
now
funny because I liked him in Denver. I really liked him in Denver.
Right.
I hated him in Chicago. That's kind of stuck.
Right, absolutely. So now that he's no longer the Bears quarterback, I might very well go back to liking him. We'll see what happens here. Yeah, but that's about the news for the Bears. There really just isn't anything of interest.
Low Bears.
Right, exactly. Moving over to the Vikings, and this is a story that, you know, I guess is going to continue to be the story for the Vikings in the near future, is whether or not Teddy will play again. And in further news, it sounds like the front office expects Teddy to play again at some point. Now obviously that throws in the complication of them not picking up his fifth year option. So how they handle the situation going forward is, I mean, it will be dramatic one way or the other.
On his fifth year option, they have now, it's as if this year didn't, as long as he doesn't come off the pup.
Yes.
It's as if this year didn't happen. So they call it his contract tolls.
Yes.
So they get a freebie year as long as he stays in the pup to make that decision to take his fifth year off option next year and play his fourth year next year.
Yes.
So that's kind of good for the team. And why not be optimistic? Why not?
Right.
You're cheering him on as much as you are the fans and anybody else, right?
So we push this narrative of Bradford versus Teddy through a whole other season. So this is a topic that's going to keep coming up. Like, this is not over. This is we're not even halfway through this situation yet. So,
and remember, Sam Bradford is still the number one pick.
We are literally halfway through this situation, but
and the Sam Bradford number one pick thing is not going away until they get a number one pick.
Yeah. So that's the Vikings. Moving on to the Packers, we've got really seriously nothing. There's a photo of Kevin King, their first, I shouldn't say their first round pick, their first pick, who came early in the second round, with Calvin Johnson. He's he appears to be almost as tall as Calvin Johnson. They got excited about that he is almost as tall as Calvin Johnson. That doesn't.
There's so little news in Green Bay every year.
I mean, that's literally I'm reaching and that's what I'm getting. So
you're reaching all the way around. Wow.
That's the best I got.
All right.
There's nothing of interest there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Case. Thanks for doing the heavy duty research on the division this week. Guys, don't forget, if you're looking to get your Lions swag or any kind of, your Michigan MSU Spartan swag, head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Up on the main menu, there's a shop link and it'll take you to Fanatics. Why do you want to do that? Well, because they give us a kickback on anything you buy. And it's just one extra click. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to type in Fanatics. And then you get the official licensed team merchandise. Like I said, college, any sport, NHL, NFL, Lions in particular. And it's the whole gradient of swag and jerseys and blankets and toasters and everything else you could get. Lot of really, really great stuff there. Like I said, they give us a kickback. It's a great way to support the show by doing something you were going to do anyway. And, you get your stuff, you show off your team. So head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, click on that shop link. Also, you can hit Amazon from there, and it's the same kind of deal. It'll take you straight to Amazon without any funny pop-ups or anything. And they give us a kickback on anything you buy. And, I do everything, all my shopping at Amazon. Unfortunately, they won't give me a kickback on my own purchases, but whatever. If you're going to do any shopping there, make sure to come to us first and get there through us so that they get that little browser cookie to let us know or to let them know to support us. Thank you all who are doing your shopping that way. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the support you guys give the show.
Time for a different kind of breakdown with today's special guest.
All right, what a special guest we have this week. We're joined by one of the Detroit Lions' three reporters, the multimedia reporter and close confidant and advisor to Bob Quinn. She's the architect of his draft strategy, Tori Petrie. Tori, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys, so much for having me. You're not the first one to accuse me of being the architect of this draft.
Well, it's better a Quinn draft than a Mayhew draft, I'll tell you that.
Yes, yeah, we're pretty pleased with that. We've had numerous, requests to have you back on the show, so we love that you're here with us, spending time here. We're just going to run through some draft picks and try to get your perspective on it from a little bit more of an inside angle. Not that we're expecting you to reveal any major secrets or anything, but just to get the temperature of where things are here.
Sure.
First off, let's go with how I guess it's one of the most popular. It's hard not to be a popular first round pick, but Jared Davis.
I think there's one player out there.
We're not going there, Case. Stop it. Be nice to Tori. Don't put her in a tough spot, okay? Jeez.
Jared Davis.
Yeah, for those who might not have understood the architect of the draft reference, of course, I am a Florida graduate, as is Jared Davis and the second round pick, Jalen Tabor, Tease Tabor. So just funny how that worked out, being there during draft week and kind of watching the draft unfold and then seeing those picks come in and that they were both Gators. Of course, everybody in my office just had to give me a hard time about it. So that was pretty fun for me, particularly with Jared, because I actually know Jared personally because he was one of my students when I was a tutor at the University of Florida. Cool. So really, football is a small world. It really is. It was just my college job. I worked for the Athletic Association, tutoring all the student athletes, no matter what sport. that were in my college major, which was broadcasting. And Jared was in broadcasting, and I tutored him in several classes, along with, you know, a lot of other Florida athletes that, you know, you might recognize their names. But Jared was one of my students, and I will say he was one of the great ones, one of the ones that was, you know, responsive, came tutoring, all that kind of stuff. So he's a good kid. He really is. And, you know, I hadn't really kept in solid touch with him since I, you know, left Florida. He obviously was still there in school. I went, you know, on my own way in my career. And it's crazy to have our paths cross like this again. But of course, from a, you know, non-personal perspective, I mean, he is a great football player as well. And I think that that was evident, you know, even in the weeks leading up to the draft, he was the guy that a lot of mock drafts targeted as somebody that could really help out this Lions defense because of his aggressiveness, his physicality, his speed, explosiveness, all those characteristics that the Lions need on that defense. You know, they need more playmakers on the defense, and that was evident after last season. And I think that that's really what they set out to do in this draft. And Bob Quinn, when he talked at the owners meeting, said he wanted to get younger at the linebacker position, and he definitely did that with the additions of Jared Davis, and of course, you know, as we'll get to Jalen Reeves-Maven as well. So he got younger at the linebacker position like he wanted to, and the first step to that was adding Jared Davis. And as we all know, Reuben Foster was still on the board at that time. That was still a possibility, but there were so many question marks with off the field and with medical with Reuben Foster. And, you know, Jared was the guy that Bob Quinn went with, in my opinion, because he, you know, is the complete package of a playmaker on the field and somebody who you don't have to worry about off the field. You know, somebody who's going to get themselves into a situation where they could get suspended or be, you know, an issue in the locker room. That's not, you know, who Jared is, of what I know of him and what every scout and every analyst has reported of him as well. So I think that was really why that pick was so solid. And I'm looking forward to seeing him get out there on the field. I mean, Bob told me in our post-draft interview that he intends for Jared to start at middle linebacker. You know, it could be a situation like last offseason where we saw Taylor Decker come in and start at left tackle right away. And, you know, he never really left from that position. Of course, he had to compete for it. You know, it wasn't like it was just handed to him, but he never lost that job. So it could be a situation like that with Jared. Of course, there's a lot of moving pieces at linebacker right now. Obviously, after DeAndre Levy left, you know, you had Tyre Whitehead playing Mike linebacker last year. And it looks like that's what Bob Quinn wants Jared to do this year. Of course, we'll see how that ends up panning out, but it definitely will be fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting how you say how small the football world is, because when we think about the second round pick, I taught him everything he knows about Hialeah. So that was kind of neat. What do you think about Tease? I was pretty excited to get a cornerback there. Usually you kind of shy away from cornerbacks as draft picks, as immediate impact kind of players, because they take a little time to season and develop. But this feels like a pretty good pick at number two.
Well, I mean, to your point, especially with cornerbacks, I mean, cornerback is really a position that takes a lot of adjustment once you get into the NFL. I mean, you look at Darius Slay's track to where he is right now and the player that he is now. He wasn't the player that he is now his first year in the league. It took him time to adjust and to get used to the speed of the game and to get used to, you know, playing that position at the next level. It's a tough position to play. And, you know, I expect that Keys will have to go through that kind of transition as well, as most corners who come into the league do. It's, you know, not common for a corner to come in and have a huge breakout year and sustain that career, you know, throughout the rest of his years in the league, just as a top corner from the very first time he steps onto the field, because you do have to get burned a few times and learn your lessons. And, you know, we've seen that with other cornerbacks who come into the league. So, you know, I don't think it's realistic to expect him to step on the field day one and be the same player as Darius Slay or better than Darius Slay or anything like that. But I do think that you're getting a good football player in him. And that's what Bob Quinn talked about when he gave his post-draft press conference about how, you know, he believes in Jesus' play speed and not necessarily his, you know, 40 seed. I mean, this is my perspective. You know, you draft these guys to play football, not to run 40s. Now, you know, you kind of are in that type of situation when, you know, you're up against a receiver and he's just running a go route and you've got to keep up with him. But, you know, there's more to it than that. You know, there's, you know, playing at the line of scrimmage. How do you play at the line of scrimmage? And you know, can you get that receiver off of his route, slowing down that way? There's a lot of different things that go into it. And I think that, you know, it's something that he's going to have to learn how to, you know, maximize the rest of his skill set. If that speed ends up being something that receivers are able to take advantage of, but you look at the way the kid played in college, and it's not like he was going up against, you know, lower level competition. I mean, this guy played in the SEC and was very talented, and you know, he played out there with Vernon Hargraves, who went to Tampa Bay in last year's draft, and he was a talented corner as well. And then obviously alongside Quincy Wilson, and they called it, you know, pick your poison between the two of those guys, because both of them were shutdown corners at Florida. And they were legit players at Florida, and you didn't really see them in college getting burned and you know, to speed being an issue in college. And from all accounts that, you know, we've talked to, that you just don't see that being an issue on film. Now, how it translates to the next level, we'll see. But like I said, you drafted this guy to play football, not to run 40s.
For sure. And I think, you know, after some initial reaction that was kind of harsh, I think a lot of Lions fans, myself included, have really warmed up to what he is as a player, in terms of a technical player who's going to create some turnovers for us, which was definitely a problem this last year. Now, whether or not he makes a significant impact as a rookie, that's way up in the air, as it is with every cornerback. You know, Slay was benched as a rookie, that kind of thing. So it wouldn't be surprising to see it take a little time for him to get into the groove of things. But I definitely, you know, I think most of us are feeling positive about his potential future. The Lions must have waited until you had to leave the room to take their number three pick. but we've basically at 6'4", ran a 4.5 40, basically Calvin Johnson, right?
Well, I mean, I think that is doing a disservice to both Calvin Johnson and any player that you make that comparison to, if you're going to say that, because nobody is Calvin Johnson. I mean, this guy is a big-bodied wide receiver.
Right, right.
Of course, you're talking about Kenny Golladay, Lions' third-round pick. You know, he came from a smaller school, so the competition that he went up against isn't, you know, the same as some of the guys that played in, you know, the Big Ten, the SEC, and whatnot. But Bachman really liked what he saw in him and what he was able, you know, to do with that. And I think one of the stories that stood out from our conversations with him over, you know, the conference call and whatnot was that, you know, this is something Bachman pointed out as well, that this guy was someone who wanted to transfer, and he made a tape of his own stuff and had it sent out to, you know, colleges and whatnot. He was very under-recruited, you know, and going into college and when he was trying to transfer, and just the initiative that he took to make that tape and to send it out places, you know, it's a cliche, but, you know, you say that this guy really loves football. He's a football player, that kind of thing. And I think that that was something that stood out about him, just that work ethic and dedication to be able to continue playing the game of football, even, you know, when his first opportunity didn't work out.
All right. Yeah, let's move on then. I know we've only got so much time here. We're going to try to get through all these picks. We've got Jalen Reeves-Maybin went back to the linebacker well as an outside linebacker. This guy looks like there's a lot of talent on tap, and he may be an impact player pretty early.
Yeah, I really liked watching his highlight film. I mean, we put out a highlight film of every draft pick that we can on DetroitLions.com, and his was a fun one to watch. You know, he really did wreak a lot of havoc for the Vols, and, you know, I think that he can be a contributor when it comes to that linebacking core as well. I mean, you have a lot of names in the mix there right now. Obviously, you expect Darren Davis and Tahir Whitehead to be probably at the top of that list as far as going to start. at linebacker, but, you know, who else is it going to be? You know, you have Paul Warlow and Jalen Reesmaybe, and obviously in that mix as well. So seeing what happens at the linebacker position is definitely going to be a good competition when it comes to, you know, summer OTAs and mini camps and then down into training camp. And I definitely think that he's going to have his name in the mix. And one fun fact about him is that he is related to former Tigers outfielder Cameron Maybe. But that's just like a crazy Detroit sports connection. I thought that was really cool.
Sure. And I totally agree. I think, you know, he brings a level of coverage where in situations where we've got, you know, maybe a smaller size tight end or a slot receiver where they'll bring him in, you know, for coverage situations on third down and whatnot, maybe against in those situations. But I like the guy a lot. Moving on to the second fourth round pick, we have Mr. Big Hands, Michael Roberts. Obviously the Lions probably have their starting tight end and their blocking tight end in Ebron and Fells, but you have to think that a guy with that kind of physical tools that he has will at least see the field this year, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it was something a lot of people predicted the Lions would want in this draft is another receiving type tight end to complement Eric Ebron. And I went to the NFL Network luncheon before the draft on Thursday in Philadelphia, and I talked to Daniel Jeremiah. And, you know, we interviewed those guys, asked them who they think the Lions, you know, might have their attention on, you know, who are some tight ends if they decide to wait till the second day for a tight end, who are some days that could make sense. And one of the names that Daniel Jeremiah said was Michael Roberts, and he said that is one of his favorite players in this draft. And, you know, the Lions ended up with him. So, props to him. He was right. Michael Roberts ended up with the Lions. So, I think that he was a guy that some analysts were high on. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does for the Lions.
Yeah, I think he brings a lot to the Lions and for Eric Ebron as well. So, there should be some really amazing development out of that. I'm really excited about that. Let's move on now. We've got Jamal Agnew out of San Diego. Not San Diego State. And one of our writers on the Detroit Lions podcast.com, Ash Thompson, is probably the only person in the world that mocked Jamal Agnew to the Lions.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Wow. Props to him.
So what do you see? What that do you see impressive. In Jamal here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he is a guy that could definitely compete at the slot corner position. He is a smaller cornerback, so that's kind of where people have kind of pegged him at. He's very fast, though, but that's definitely going to be a competition when it comes down to it as well. Obviously the Lions signed DJ Hayden in the offseason. Quandre Diggs has kind of been the Lions' table there at slot corner. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out, and I expect him to be in the mix for the competition there.
For sure. And you know, he was a big surprise, I think, for a lot of people. So there's been a lot of he's brought maybe more discussion than a typical fifth rounder would bring. But I think, you know, when you look at the potential he has for special teams, obviously that's something that Bob Quinn and the front office value. So I don't think it should be a huge surprise either. We've got a bit of a tweener in the sixth round with our first pick in the sixth round. That's Jeremiah Ledbetter. Is there any idea how they might try to use him?
I think that they view him, you know, more. Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. You look at Anthony Zettel. He came in last year and he was kind of, you know, that tweener as well. And they ended up using him at defensive end. So, you know, we'll see what that ends up looking like. I believe that he might end up being more in the center or in the interior of that defensive line. Of course, you have Pat O'Connor as well that they drafted later on. So those are your two defensive linemen. And we'll see how that ends up playing out. You know, some of those guys, even when they do get assigned a position, still play inside and outside. And then, but the defensive line was just a really interesting thing to look at in the draft because so many people mocked that as the first round pick that the Lions were going to take, and then you waited till the end of the third day of the draft to take those defensive linemen. And, you know, it just speaks to the fact that Bob Quinn thinks he's pretty confident in what he already has on the defensive line. So that will definitely be an interesting one to watch play out, because, you know, Cornelius Washington, free agent signing there on the defensive line as well. Jeremiah, Todd O'Connor, you know, in the seventh round, that was their last pick of the draft, the Lions' final pick of the draft. So that defensive line is definitely an interesting one to see how that one will play out. Obviously, you think Biggie's going to be that, obviously, the starter at defensive end on one side, but who's going to start opposite him? It's really up in the air right now. I mean, I would say maybe Kerry Hyder's at the top of that list because of the productive year he had last year. Mm-hmm. But I think that spot's up for grabs right now.
Sure, sure. All right, and moving into another six-round pick, you got Brad Kaya, who a lot of people are thinking out of the sixth round is going to put a big push on for that backup spot on Jake Rudock now that Dan Orlovsky's gone. What do you think? Do you think he's got a shot to really push Jake?
I mean, that's what they say, you know, around the building, is that they love to create competition. And that's been something that we've heard thousands of times since Bob Quinn came in, is that it's all about competition, you know, drafting guys and bringing guys in that can push the guys that are already on the roster and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I think that's part of it for sure. And, you know, Bob Quinn said that he didn't go into this draft thinking I'd need to draft another quarterback, but that he, you know, kind of just had to keep to his board. He didn't expect Brad Kaya to be there at that position, but, you know, he was the guy that was highest on their board at the time, and he said sometimes you just got to trust your own draft board. And that's, you know, how they ended up with Brad Kaya. And, of course, there's only two quarterbacks on the roster right now. You know, you need more bodies than that when it comes to off-season training and training camp and all like that. So it was inevitable that they were going to add a third one, you know, I guess we didn't know whether that was going to be in the draft or in, you know, another veteran free agent signing later on in the summer. But obviously Brad Kaya is the one that they went with. And it'll definitely be interesting to see how that shakes out between Jake Rudock and Brad Kaya. Obviously, Jake's got some more NFL experience than Brad Kaya does. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, not regular season experience, but just having a year working with an NFL quarterback. Being in that quarterback room, going through an off season already. So it definitely has that upper hand. So that one definitely will be another fun one to watch. And that's the cool thing about all these draft picks, is that it definitely helps us narrow down some very interesting competitions for the summer and training camp.
Okay, yeah, for sure. The very last man on our list, the Lions version of Mr. Irrelevant this year, Pat O'Connor, you mentioned him earlier. Like you said, another kind of what do we do with this guy? Is there any chance that this is a player that, you know, sticks?
Yeah, there always is. I mean, Dwayne Washington stuck last year.
Yeah, he did.
Meaningful snaps last year, and he was a seventh rounder. But especially, you know, looking at that defensive line and how rotational they are, there's always guys coming in off the bench on the defensive line for the Lions. And Chris Kocurek just seems to have a way with finding diamonds in the rough on the defensive line. I mean, you look at George Johnson. Way back in 2014, George Johnson kind of came out of nowhere. Somebody that was just supposed to be a camp body, and he ended up being a really important piece on the defense in 2014.
And obviously Hyder went through the same thing.
Yeah, the most recent one. So there's something about that defensive line room that they just really know how to get the right things out of guys. And who knows, Pat O'Connor, Jeremiah Ledbetter, those might be your guys for this year. Who's going to be the next Kerry Hyder? Who's going to be the next George Johnson? There's going to be someone. I guarantee you there's going to be someone, and we'll just have to wait and see who it is.
For sure, for sure. And Tease Tabor, with all that highlight experience, is going to be bouncing off the walls. It's going to be great. No. one quick announcement. I know we're short on time here, Tori, and I appreciate the time. I just want to let everyone know Tori has agreed to join us on a monthly basis. or thinking of maybe calling it Tori on Tap or something else, but she's going to come join the show as on a regular basis and help break down some of the stuff. She's kind of our Lions insider. So Tori, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your time and agreeing to work with us as we go forward. Check her out on Twitter at Sports Tori. Don't forget it's T-O-R-I. And make sure you give her a follow and thank her for all the great stuff she does with the show. Thanks a lot, Tori, for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you next month.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Are you ready to get schooled? It's time for Risden's Wisdom with the Riz, Jeff Risden.
All right, look who's on the line. It's the Riz, Jeff Risden, senior NFL and draft writer for DraftBreakdown.com and RealGM.com. He's also the managing editor at a couple of the USA Today wire sites, the one for the Texans and the one for the Browns. It is Jeff Risden. Jeff, how are you doing, man? Great to have you back.
It is nice to be back talking Lions with you guys. How's it going?
It's going pretty damn good. We've got some. We've got one of your, you know, big things that we've talked to you about before is that you like to try to hit up a lot of the camp stuff and be, you know, have a foot on the ground in what's going on there. And it sounds like you're going to be present for the rookie undrafted free agent minicamp.
That is the plan. I will be there on Friday to check out the fresh faces, see all the rookies and the undrafted guys, so to get a nice little look at ahead of what's coming for us as camp progresses, and you know, just the first impression too of these guys physically, seeing them all together and seeing what they look like, and
yeah,
you know, seeing if I can outrun Tease Tabor if he finds out that I've talked bad about him.
Well, just so you know, I taught him everything he knows about Hialeah. How is it to be like you're the veteran of minicamp? You could probably show these guys around and tell them a lot more. They're gonna be wide eyed. How does that feel for you to look at these young kids coming in with all that age you have under your wheels?
Well, having not played since before any of these guys were born, and in some of their cases, their parents. It's interesting. It's always interesting to me to see who comes out as a natural leader, who shows up and is like, you know, an alpha male, and who's sort of a follower, and who's, you know, like gravitating towards the coaches, and who's gravitating towards the other players, who's asking questions, that sort of thing. That's kind of what I look for. You can't really tell a lot from the actual workouts that are on the field in terms of like what they're going to do on the field, but you can get a feel for their personalities and their fit with the team, their fit with the coaches. That's what I'm there looking for. And I think most of the guys who come from the bigger programs are prepared for that. And this is where you really see a difference between guys that have come from Alabama or Florida or Ohio State and guys that come from Alabama State or Old Dominion or something like that, where, you know, they just don't have that kind of, you know, exposure to these things. So that's what I look for. And I've learned that over the years from a variety of veteran beat writers, both in Detroit and from other cities too. This will be actually, I haven't been to Lions minicamp since 2014 at their rookie minicamp. So it's been a couple of years for me.
Well, we will absolutely be looking forward to hearing what you have to tell us in terms of, you know, for those early insights and you know, a lot of times it's tough to glean too much information, but it's always, you know, we always want to know as much as we can early on, and so we'll gobble that up when the time comes. Moving on, we feel like we here at the Detroit Lions podcast and with the website are slowly but surely ascending into the realm of being like a legitimate presence in the Detroit sports news sphere. And that like totally a pat on the back for ourselves and, you know, bragging a little bit, but, we also want to give credit to other people who are, that we like that are also moving up in the media world. And this week we found out that Nate Burleson, who's been on Good Morning Football, has now been assigned to join the CBS pregame show on their network. And that's a big jump up for him. And we really like him. I just posted a highlight reel of his 2011-2012 seasons that from Sandman, made that several years ago. which is just a reminder of how long Sandman's been around, which is great. He was such a heart guy for us. He really was. Like, he wasn't necessarily the most talented guy on the field, but there wasn't a player that gave more on every single play. And that's the kind of thing that endears you to a city. And that's why I think, you know, he, even though we all kind of recognize that he wasn't an elite wide receiver, we love him to death and we want everything good for him. And so we're super excited that, this is happening for him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he's a guy that he still has his Lion Blood clothing line,
yeah,
which is great, by the way.
Yeah.
I actually have a piece from it. So I'm as happy for him. He's actually thrown me a bone professionally. So I, you know, Nate's a great dude. He gets it. He's smart. I do watch Good Morning Football quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to seeing him on the CBS Morning Show. You know, taking over for whoever they kicked out. I actually really enjoy the entire turnover that they've done this year with the announcing, with Phil Sims going out. And, you know, various people moving around to different places. Tony Romo coming in. I think Jay Cutler is going to be fantastic because he doesn't give a crap, and that's going to be great. and Burleson is a guy, he's smart, but he also has his finger on the pulse of the players. He's not afraid to say something that the media people might not understand. And that's something that I think some ex-players have trouble with in bridging that gap and understanding how to present the information without seeming like uppity or condescending, and he does it very well. So I'm really happy for Nate.
Yeah, he's really moving up. He's almost at Risden level, isn't he?
I'd like to cash his paychecks instead of mine.
Oh man, you and me both. We could split them and still be happier. Oh yes. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about a little bit of Lions, in particular one player, Nevin Lawson. Pro Football Focus just said he was number one as far as yards allowed per coverage snap amongst third-year cornerbacks who are left-handed and play on Tuesdays. Oh, wait, the last part I added, but seems like a pretty fine little window to kind of pick out who's number one, but not bad. I mean, he's looking good for a slot corner, right?
Oh, my God. How many qualifiers do they have to put on this to make him not look crappy? I mean, it's yards per route run or yards per targeted – or yards per coverage snap,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Think about what Nevin Lawson does well. He's pretty good at covering close to the line, and he's great at tackling right after the catch. He doesn't get asked to cover deep often. He's the guy that, you know, that's where Glover Quinn goes in transition, and Lawson will transition to the inside or lower level receiver and let the deep guy go. That's part of the Lions' defensive schematic. So he's not really on the hook for any of those deep passes. So that's the easy way to explain it. And I don't want it to sound like it's you know, a negative on Nevin Lawson, because that's the role they've asked him to play. Mm-hmm. And he is fairly good at it. I know people bag on him all the time. He's a quality starting cornerback. I think he's an ideal number three cornerback instead of a number two, but there are worse number twos in the league. There are far worse number twos around the NFC North. Some of them who have been drafted a lot higher than Nevin Lawson, I might add.
Yeah. Well, I remember last year when you first told us that the Lions thought pretty highly of Nevin Lawson, we were shocked. And it was, my initial reaction was, oh no, right? He's not going to be the guy. But after seeing another year of growth out of him, I mean, he has improved. He's continued to get better. Maybe you know, another year, another two years here, I think he could be a good, really good number two if he keeps at the rate, the kind of the arc of improvement that he's on now.
I mean, it'll be surprising if he ends up long term in the number two role, just because that's the role they drafted Tabor for. But it would definitely be surprising to me if he doesn't have a significant role one way or the other this season. And they'll visit his he'll be a free agent after this year, so they'll visit that, you know, as it comes up in the off season. And I will not be surprised if they choose to finally keep some, you know, actual depth at the cornerback position by paying Nevin Lawson a little bit more than maybe what you'd expect the depth cornerback to get paid.
I think he's in line to stick around. I don't think they have any intention of getting rid of him. He's obviously not the priority. You're going to have Stafford and Ziggy with their hands out first, and rightly so.
Right.
But this is the type of player where if you lose him, fans are going to be like, oh, good riddance, he was gone. But, okay, who do you have to replace him?
Right. And
they don't have that now. That's what bad teams do. Good teams keep players like him because he does have a useful role. You can't just let him leave without a backup plan. Mm-hmm. That's what happened with Sue and Fairley, and why we scrambled to get Haloti Ngata, and why guys who shouldn't be in the league have played on our defensive line for the last couple of years.
Yeah,
and just the Ziggy's handout thing, it's going to be a little more wrinkled and arthritic than we originally thought, right? But we talked about that earlier.
I'll go off on this for a second. I don't understand what happened with his age. When he was drafted, it was like common knowledge that he was like 24 going on 25. And for whatever reason, his age declined, whether it was, you know, the Lions lowering it or he lowering it, or they're in cahoots to lower it. I vividly remember going back to his draft where we talked about, you know, with beat writers and with people on other teams and in the draft community, we're like, he's going to be 29 years old when he gets his second contract. Well, there you go. I mean, I don't know what happened between now and then that people thought this was different. I don't get it.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I have a hard time remembering that, but somewhere in the back of my memory that sticks to the idea that, that came up then.
That was one of the big downsides for drafting him.
Right, right. His age. And even at 2 years younger than what he was supposed to be, that's still like, he's still kind of old for, you know, somebody coming
where,
off
where the it comes contract, into play so. Is at the end of his next contract. It's fine that he's 29 and it's fine that he'll be 30 and 31. But at the end of that contract, you're looking at a guy who he could be running out of usefulness.
Then the question obviously becomes if he has a great season this year and they franchise him, then he's 30, maybe, depending on, you know, how valid these things are and how much money and how big of a long-term contract will he command at that point either. So
that changes the dynamic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Makes it more likely that he will sign. And this is me talking with agents about this stuff. He will probably want to sign a very short-term deal, a 2 or 3 year, very front-loaded contract, and then get another deal after that.
Sure.
And that next deal, that third deal, I'm going to guess probably wouldn't be in Detroit, because I don't think that this regime will pay for past performance. They're looking for what you can do for them in now and in the future.
Right.
And at that point, I think Ziggy's usefulness, I think he can still be useful. I shouldn't say it that way, but I think his prime will be over. And that's something that if you follow the quote unquote Patriot way, and I know some people hate that cliche, but it works. They don't hold on to guys who used to be really good and might still be okay. They let Vince Wilfork and Richard Seymour and all those guys go. And I think that's what will happen with Ziggy. I think you've got him for 2 or 3 more years, and that'll probably be it.
And there's a monetary component to it, because they picked up Randy Moss and they picked up older guys who were maybe past their prime but could still perform, but they got them at a good price. And that's,
yes, they did.
You know, they're in a position to be able to do that and negotiate that a little better than a lot of other teams, because a lot of those older guys, they do want that ring, right? They do want that chance.
They're on the ring whore tour. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And you can get them, you know, a team like the Patriots can get a player like that at a good rate. Harder for a team like the Lions, you know, of last year, maybe this year, but you're starting to look like, hey, you can at least be in part of the conversation. I don't know that they'd pay the money for Ziggy, and Ziggy's going to have to figure out if he's going to go for that money or if he wants to stay. He's kind of a, you know, the 3D glasses that he wore on draft day, just tell you straight out, he's a pretty crazy cat. Tough to figure out.
He is definitely his own man, and I really appreciate guys like that. I like that he's a free thinker. I like that he, you know, celebrates his African heritage, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
There's some guys that sort of run away from that, but he embraces it. And you know what? We're better for having him, but we're also better for not having him too long. And I think that's the way that the Lions will look at it. I do think he'll be with this team next year and the year after that. But beyond that, I mean, it depends on the contract that he gets. But I think there's going to be a real battle there between his representation and what they want so he can get another contract after this and what the Lions will want to do, getting an out for a 32 or 33-year-old defensive end who, by the way, is coming off of an injury-ravaged season where he got, what, 2 sacks? So, yeah, he's not exactly negotiating from a position of strength.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we got a rookie minicamp coming up this weekend. After that is the everybody minicamp, right? It's like a week later?
It's like a weekend later,
yeah.
I think.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. And then hopefully you'll get your credentials. And then rumor has it you wanted to challenge Sam Martin to bench press rep contest. Is that still on? You guys still doing all and doing it for charity? You gonna donate all the money you raise?
he would kick my ass, literally.
I know. I just wanted to throw it out there.
I just want a jersey of his. It doesn't even have to be washed. I'll take it right off his back. I'm good with that.
Well, you got your press credentials. We've seen it done.
Yes, we have.
And that is in no way meant to undermine the honesty and integrity of Mr. Risden, Lions organization. He's a great guy, and you don't have to worry about him. He will not do that. He's not one of those kind of guys at all.
I will not. I will not steal things from locker rooms, I promise.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us, man. It's an abbreviated week. We got to you late, and I apologize, but thanks again for joining us, and we will catch you not next week, the week after, when we do our next episode.
Sounds great. I'll have some good skinny on some of the undrafted free agents who stick. I've actually been watching a few of those guys, and I think some of them have a good shot. So I'll put my theories to the test this weekend and report back with you then.
All right, that's going to do it for this week. Remember, Black Rifle Coffee, they're back, and man, they're back with a vengeance. Great stuff. They've got your K-Cups. They got it in ground coffee. They got light roast, dark roast, all kinds of great stuff and all kinds of swag. Mugs, hats, T-shirts, the whole thing. Check them out, blackriflecoffee.com. And don't forget via Twitter to tweet at us in 119 characters or less your wake up and smell the coffee moment and hashtag it with Win Black Rifle Coffee. We're going to pick a couple winners this month again to get some great free swag from Black Rifle Coffee. Remember, this show needs your involvement. Use the comments in the subreddit to give us feedback. That's how we got to be number one, and that's how we're growing even more. And we thank you guys all for your support to get us that big. And don't forget to tell a friend. Telling your friends helps us grow even further. Also, don't forget about us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast or DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon link. We also have a direct donation link that takes you straight to PayPal where you can give us a quickie. And who wouldn't want to do that, right? Great way to help us out. And for all you Patreon donors, thanks so much, you guys. It's great. And there's been a lot of help there. It's a great way to support the show and help us keep moving forward with all the great stuff we got coming, including that great announcement on Tori. You know, it's the bigger we get, the more that kind of stuff we can do with you guys. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at DETLionsPodcast. That's at DETLionsPodcast. We're almost up to 1,000 followers who get to see Jess.
Hey, careful, guys.
Don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line. That's 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Leave a message, get a chance to hear yourself on the show. That's always fun. And don't forget to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and subscribe to the podcast. That way we get to come in your little box automatically. Who wouldn't want that? Thank you all for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Come on, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3. Lions!